Welcome back to the show. I'm Tom. Thanks for tuning in. Today, we are going to hear from Nick and Zach of Bellflower Brewing in Portland, Maine, which, as you will hear, is a pretty new brewery. I heard about it somewhere, can't remember when, but obviously somewhat recently because they're less than a year old. And I did not have plans to go there when I was in Portland, but thanks to Waze being useless, I ended up on the wrong street and saw the logo on the wall, which I recognized. So I stopped in for a beer, and it was really good. Nick and Zach weren't there, but I connected with them, and they are pretty awesome people. Before Bellflower, Zach was at Lone Pine. Nick was working on his own brewery, some other stops in between for both of them. And before all that, they were both early pieces of the puzzle at Trillium. I think Zach said he was actually employee number two at Trillium, but we'll hear more of that in a bit from them because I'm probably fucking it up right now. So yeah, let's hear from them. I'm out of words to say for this introduction, so here's a conversation with Nick and Zach. Thank you guys for joining. I know obviously East Coast, it's 8:30 there, so I know you have other commitments than this, like family and, you know, not working. So
the kids are in bed. It's all good.
But yeah, thanks for taking the time and making this work. One of you guys, or either one of you, want to start with just introducing yourself and your story, how you got into beer, what made you decide to start a brewery or start working at a brewery. And kind of, I know you guys were at Trillium for a little while, and kind of go from there.
Zach, you kick it off.
Okay. Well, me personally, I started homebrewing in college around the age of 21, around that age. And just fell in love with that. I wasn't even really into craft beer, I guess, when I first started homebrewing. I was just a college student, you know, working on a budget, and I was like, oh, I can make beer in, you know, my basement. That sounds great. Let's do that. But really, like, went down the rabbit hole. Started getting involved in, you know, homebrew groups and reading everything I can. Fast forward a couple of years, I'm in Boston with my wife. We're both in grad school. I'm spending a lot more time studying beer than I am my graduate studies. And thinking about making a change of career path. And around that time, yeah, I guess 2012, met JC and Esther of Trillium Brewing Company, heard more about, you know, what their plans were. I love their story and them as people. And I just said, hey, how can I get involved? So started helping them out, with, you know, the build out, piloting recipes. This is when I met Nick and we started our friendship. I continued on with Trillium from open. I was employee number two, kind of working back of house and front of house a bit. That evolved into a brewing position there, and then eventually head brewer and director of brewing operations. And then actually got to work with Nick at Trillium a few years later. He can kind of tell you, I guess, how he got involved at that point. Yeah, if you want to,
I'll hop in here, and then we can like tie the story together, right? Yeah, yeah. So I mean, I was actually telling somebody this story the other day. My mom was going to this farmer's market, and she saw there's this homebrew group there that was like auctioning off, you know, like a chance to brew with the homebrew club, and you know, she threw like 20 bucks in or something and she won. And so she gave me like the ticket or whatever that she won. And so the first time I ever homebrewed was on like, I think it was a two barrel system. So it was around like, you know, 60, 75 gallons, something like that. And what this homebrew club would do is they would split the wort up, you know, between all the members of the homebrew club. And then they would just like take it home and ferment it on their own. And that was like my first introduction into homebrewing, and you know, immediately fell in love. It was like, oh man, this is amazing. You know, I can make like whatever kind of beer I want, whatever I want to drink. You know, I'm not like tied to whatever's at the grocery store or the liquor store. So I started homebrewing like pretty significantly, very rapidly after that. And, you know, similar to Zach, I think I had seen like a, I don't even remember what the blog was, but it was some blog talking about like, you know, craft beer. And they were talking about this guy, JC Tatro, who was starting the third production brewery in Boston. Cause at that point it was Sam Adams, Harpoon, and then, you know, a bunch of brew pubs, but it wasn't like a production brewery, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think at the end of the article, it had JC's email. So I just like fired him an email, you know, blind, and said, hey, I'm a home brewer. Would love to learn how to open a brewery. You know, I'll do anything for free, basically. And at that point, I kind of decided that I wanted to like open a brewery. You know, I was like, I was seriously into making beer and like, and craft beer in general. So yeah, so, you know, the story picks up with Zach right around there. And, you know, there was a big group of people there initially to like help out. And, you know, slowly everybody just kind of disappeared until it was like probably the four of us, including, or five of us, I guess, including, Adam, the brewer at the time at the, you know, when Trillium opened. And then, you know, at that point, like I still was like diehard, like I want to start my own brewery. So I, actually moved to Central Connecticut, you know, was going down the path of like opening my own brewery there. And this was probably in like it was 2013. It was the year Trillium opened. And, you know, I had penned a paper on a lease where the landlord was going to build everything for us. I had already bought the brew house. I had the fermenters. They were sitting in the warehouse. And, you know, pretty quickly realized that I wasn't going to be able to do it and just kind of abandoned my plans and focused on my career at the time. But then, you know, circling back again to Zach, JC and Esther, actually JC reached out and said like, hey, we got this job that, you know, I think you'd be a good fit for, you should apply. So I applied and didn't get the job, but they gave me a different job, which is awesome. Which is even better for me. I was the director of development, which meant I was spearheading like new projects for them. And, you know, it was really rewarding getting to participate with them at like such a high level and be a part of such an awesome and like, you know, dynamic and dedicated team that was like really trying to push hard to like make the best beer, you know, the best beer possible. And then the pandemic hit and, you know, Zach had moved on at that point to Lone Pine and I got laid off from Trillium because everybody got laid off. Right.
Yeah.
And that's sort of how the story ties back together at this point is, you know, I went through like a month of like serious, depression and like reevaluating my life and like what I'm going to do with myself. And, you know, I found another career basically. In medical cannabis, and I still had this like thing in the back of my head that was like, ah, you miss craft beer, you miss craft beer, you miss craft beer. And you know, I just heard about the opportunity to buy the brewery that we're currently in, and you know, it was in Portland. So my second call after the call to people that owned the place was to Zach to say, you know, hey man, like let's do this.
Yeah, so, which was that was a surprise to me. Like we were not Nick and I, I guess to back up a bit, in the early days of Trillium before they had opened, you know, we weren't really sure what the future held for us at Trillium at that point. Like the company wasn't even open. So, you know, back in 2012, 2013, we were talking about starting our own brewery then. Actually went so far as to actually look at some places. And then, you know, we got to work together for over a year and really got to know each other, you know, personally and in a working relationship.
Yeah.
But we certainly weren't in talks about opening a brewery before this opportunity came up. So it was kind of out of the blue for me at that point. I was, you know, 3 years in to my position at Lone Pine as director of brewing operations and helped them kind of grow quite a bit to like a regional brand. You know, we got through the pandemic as best we could, and I was as comfortable, you know, as anyone can be in this climate. But honestly, when Nick called, it was like, oh yeah, let's talk more. Absolutely. Just knowing Nick and, you know, trusting his intuition. I was like, we need to investigate this a little further. And that was in the summer of last year.
Yeah.
Okay. So I didn't realize that there was already a brewery there. Was that, and you don't have to name it or anything, but was that just a brewery that just didn't make it and you guys happened to be the ones to take over?
Yeah, they had like, they were doing really nice beers. Like the beers they were doing were very like thoughtful, and they were very good. They were really very good. I just don't think that, you know, it didn't all line up, right? Like there's a lot of stuff that goes into, you know, lining up like a brand and a brand identity. And for whatever reason, you know, probably mostly the pandemic, honestly, they couldn't make it work, you know, long-term. So, you know, we talk about how we feel very, very lucky and very, I mean, I guess that's the word for it is luck. We were very lucky that they trusted us enough to, you know, sell the brewery to us, because I'm sure they could have sold it to, you know, anybody. Mm-hmm. Because it's a great location and, you know, the equipment is really, really good and it's set up well, you know, for the most part. But yeah, I just think it was like a combination of a number of factors, like, and the pandemic really was just like the nail in the coffin, but they're super awesome people and they come into the brewery all the time still. And it's great to see them and, you know, we have a great relationship with them and we're very beneficial to have met them and you know have been able to buy their space.
So basically that did you basically like the brew house was in place. Did you get to just like take over their license too and just go straight in, or is that the licensing can be a little separate?
Yeah, I mean that was something we considered originally. Was because there is a legal pathway to be able to do that, but we knew we were going to need some time anyway between, you know, actually buying the brewery, you know, changing it to what we needed to do for the kind of beers that we wanted to make, and then also, you know, do recipe development. So like we felt a lot of pressure I personally felt a lot of pressure to like get open really fast. And it was one of those things where, you know, if we bought their license and like all their stuff that way, like we could have been open, you know, in December of 2020, but it wasn't what we just needed time a little bit, you know? So what we decided to do was just purchase the equipment and take over the lease and, you know, forge our own way. And that sort of like forced us to take a breath before like diving in head first, mm-hmm. which I think was like really beneficial to, you know, not only the beers that we're making now, but just our sanity in the long term.
Obviously the pandemic played into that as well. Yeah. You know, we could have maybe rushed, but you know, we got the keys in November. If we were to open up in December, January, we were still in the thick of it in terms of, you know, case numbers and positivity rate and lockdowns and such. So I in retrospect, I'm very glad, you know, we waited for a March opening.
Sure. Yeah. And even, I mean, I didn't realize you guys were that young. Yeah. I mean, even just a month just to crank out enough beers for opening day,
right?
Have enough, you know, have enough kegs or cans or whatever it is you're doing. That is a quick turnaround. So,
well, I mean, that's pretty fun too. Cause like when we opened with six beers on tap and all of that was packaged, right? Was it six beers or am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. We had every tap line at the time. filled. I mean, we were waiting. We literally, we had like grain milled. We had the, you know, HLT warm. Like we were ready to go the day we got the license in hand. And we literally mashed in and brewed twice that day and brewed the rest of the week to fill every tank. So we could have that variety at open.
Yeah.
Okay. And so just back to the brand, the Bellflower brand, I know there's some of the story on the website, but can you guys explain the name Bellflower? I know it comes from, I can't remember which of you's, it's like a family farm and like a tree on that farm, and it has some personal significance.
Yeah. So, sorry, Zach, I'll take this one again. Sorry. Yeah. I'm talking a lot. I'm sorry. Yeah. So my family has been in New England for a very long time, and we have a, I guess you'd call it like a homestead at this point, even though it's not really a homestead because nobody lives there year round. But we have a farm that's been in our family since like the mid 1800s. So it's around, it's getting to be around 200 years old at this point. It was purchased by my great, 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 I think it's the fourth great grandfather. And he, you know, he moved there with his five kids into this little shack that is still there on the property, and built the house and bought the barn from like a town, like three towns over, and took it all apart, put it on an ox cart, and, you know, brought it up the side of the hill, and then rebuilt it, you know, on location. And it's like a, it's been like a very special place for our family, just, you know, over the generations. Like my sons are the sixth generation to be there. And it's, I mean, it's like a deeply personal place to me. So it was like, it was very intimidating, you know, coming to the, you know, we had a bunch of meetings like to plan out the business and plan out the business plan and talk about branding, marketing, all that good stuff. And, you know, we had a list like, you know, I don't want to say a mile long, but it was pretty long with names for the brewery. And I was very, apprehensive to throw a Bellflower into the pot because of how personal it is to me. And anyway, so the name comes from, you're right, it comes from, an apple tree that, used to stand in the front yard. So my great great grandfather and his daughter, my great grandmother, they lived at the house and planted like a little apple stand in the front yard that's mostly still there. And, you know, she used to, when she was a little girl, you know, she'd climb the trees, and, you know, when the apple blossoms, like they bloom and then they kind of hang down, and then the apple sort of forms underneath that, you know, underneath that flower. And so she called the tree the Bellflower tree. And for whatever reason, you know, the name just kind of stuck to the farm. You know, it's had a bunch of names, and it still has a bunch of names, like, you know, different homestead names. But that was the one that kind of stuck and sort of resonated with us. And it's cool too, because, like, you know, we can build a lot of like stories off of that, right? You know, it's like talking about like different aspects of life there, or, you know, different pieces of geography that are there. And just in general, it's like a cool thing, you know, because it talks about, it sort of ties into like what our core values are. And, you know, I don't know. It's very like reflective of, I think, who we are as, like, you know, an ownership team and what we want our company to be, really. I could talk about that for a really long time too.
Well, and speaking of ownership, it's the two of you and your wives, right? It's basically the two couples are, you guys are the ownership, or like founding partners, I guess. I don't know if that's the right phrase.
Yeah. Sorry, Zach, I'm just going to keep going.
Go for it.
Yeah. I mean, I know Zach's still at the brewery and he's like still trying to work on stuff. That's why I'm just like talking. yeah. So when we were talking about, you know, forming the company, I was very insistent on, our wives being, you know, a big part of the organizational structure just in general, because, you know, I knew from experience that Zach and I were going to get like bogged down, basically. Like we were going to get sucked in, and the things that, you know, we are good at, and the things that are, you know, our core strengths are the things that we're going to have to focus on, which is like the beer, and all the other stuff was kind of going to get pushed to the side. And, you know, having our wives actually be, they actually own the brewery. Like Zach and I, are not the, majority owners. Like it's Katie and Melissa. They are the owners. So they are our bosses. So I call
them. So you guys could get fired at any point, right?
100%. Yeah. So we are the operators, they are the owners. And, okay. You know, it's honestly like, it's played out to be extremely, extremely beneficial to have them in that role, because like, it's like I said, like 5 seconds ago, you know, we cannot do it all by ourselves. Like we need, you know, someone to be like checking on the stuff that we're doing and the work that we're doing to make sure that, you know, we're following the path and we're doing everything that we say we're doing, and that we're, you know, we're following through with that stuff. I don't know if you disagree.
And with yeah. And I mean, it's been so crucial to have their perspective, right. As well. I mean, just being Nick and I being in the industry for some time, you kind of fall into patterns and you fall into certain, you know, mindsets that are hard to get out of. So having an outside perspective from them, you know, coming from different fields has just been crucial in many aspects.
Okay.
And the cool thing too, is that like, you know, we, like Zach and I are very creative when it comes to beer, but like, I mean, I don't know. A lot of the other stuff is more, I don't think is our core strength. So like, you know, branding voice, marketing voice, interior design, you know, like the little touches that go into like the taproom space, like those all come from Katie and Melissa.
Community engagement as well.
Yeah.
Just in the short time that we've been open, it's been great having their help with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's a lot, you know, the beer is what is going to largely keep people coming back, or, you know, buying it at, you know, if you're at a store or bottle shop or whatever, but if you're going there and it's a shitty environment, then right. that might, you know, no matter how good the beer is, that's,
yeah,
can have a, obviously an impact too.
Yeah.
So for the two of you guys specifically, what are your, like more specific roles? Like, are you guys both brewing? Are you like kind of splitting duties, or you have like your specializations?
Yeah. I mean, it's such a small team that it's kind of everybody's pitching in, doing everything. Nick is our, you know, operations manager. I'm head brewer by title. But we're, you know, certainly both involved in like, you know, business management, and administration, and, you know, we're both on the brew deck. We're both in the cellar getting our hands dirty. So it's kind of whatever needs to happen that day.
Okay.
Yeah.
For the system and the brew house and all that, what size system are you guys on? And I was going to ask, what is a gear's output look like? But, obviously haven't hit that mark yet. And then what is
probably guess.
Okay. Yeah. and then just what is the goal for, like, where do you see it going? Are you trying to, you know, fill every shelf you can, or is it just what comes natural and keep it kind of organic growth?
Yeah. So, I mean, for the brew house, we're operating on 10 barrel, 3 vessel, brew house. And then our cellar is a little strange, cause it's kind of set up in a brew pub style, where there's very few fermenters and several bright tanks and serving tanks. So it's designed to have like a few core brands on tap, serving from the serving tanks, like to the tap lines directly. And that's not really our business model. What attracted us to kind of a smaller scale is being able to be creative and have variations on a theme and try out new processes and new ingredients constantly. You know, I mean, in the short time we've been open, I don't know, Nick, if you have the actual number, but I think we've had like 25, you know, brands.
Yeah, I think it's 23 brands so far. Yeah, 23 brands.
Yeah, with at least, you know, four new ones in the tank currently.
Yeah.
So that's how we want to operate, you know, just personally and creatively, but also from the customer experience. Like, we want people to come in and have something new to try every time, and, you know, invite them. If they like one brand, well, the next time maybe it's going to have a slightly different, you know, process when it comes to hopping, you know, rates, or different adjunct that we're using in a stout, or a different, you know, treat. We do different treatments of our brands with different adjuncts. So we want them to, you know, maybe latch on to one brand and then take them in a different direction next time they come in, and just keep it fun and creative. So we're having to get a little creative with how we use all of our tanks in our yeast management, because we have so few fermenters. But we have one 10 barrel fermenter, two 20 barrel fermenters, and then seven bright tanks.
Okay. So you're really, yeah, seven bright tanks. So you're really trying to, or I guess, maybe not trying to, but kind of required to keep things moving and keep that. I mean, I guess you can package off the bright tank, but
yeah. Yeah, we can park beer in the bright tanks for a little while, which has been helpful, but it's that whole, like, you know, like brew pub kind of setup that we bought, you know, like these tanks were set up to be served off of, not really. Like, primary fermentation was never intended to happen in these, but that's what happens now, you know?
Yeah.
Right. So would ideally you guys replace maybe a few of those bright tanks with more fermenters and be able to maybe do a little more package for non taproom sales?
Yeah. I mean, well, it was evident before we even started brewing that we were going to need to get more conical fermenters in here. So actually the first week we were open, a local brewery that we're friends with, they were getting rid of three 20 barrel fermenters. And I said, well, you know, we're about to sell these, would you want one? We said, well, we can't really swing it financially, but we know we need it. So let's, you know, ship it. And so I think the next, you know, our second week we already bought another 20 barrel fermenter.
Don't cash that check yet, but maybe next week.
It was like, can you give us like a couple weeks to get you a check on that one? And thankfully they were very nice, very, very, very helpful. And we love them deeply, 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 deeply love them.
Yeah. It always helps to have friends in the industry like that. Those stories exactly like that, where, you know, aside from just the, you know, borrowing a pallet of malt or cans or whatever. I think that's maybe a more extreme example of like getting, you know, maybe a little helping hand to make things work.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, already the brewing community has been just so, so helpful and so inviting. It's been incredible. Like my former employers, Lone Pine, you know, they've been super supportive, as we've gone through this venture. I think I think even before we opened, you know, we got a shipment of, was it our cans, Nick?
Yeah, it was our cans
that came in. We don't have a forklift or a loading dock. So we requested a lift gate, which the truck didn't have a lift gate that showed up. So I'm just like frantically calling, Lone Pine, like, hey, can I borrow your forklift, please? Cause they're right down the street, maybe, you know, a quarter mile. They're like, yeah, sure. So jump over there, grab the keys, ride it, you know, 2 miles an hour down the road to our brewery to offload the cans. So there's just been little things, you know, like that, that we're just so grateful for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Being in this community.
You guys are both at Trillium. We talked about that. You're obviously very familiar with, the New England style, that, you know, by BJCP or whatever it is, the, you know, hazy, juicy, style. The beers that I had were, you know, definitely hop forward, juicy, fruity, all that good stuff. But to me, there's a difference between beers that are hazy and juicy and all that, and very drinkable, and hazy and juicy, and like two sips in, the roof of my mouth feels like I just kind of hit it with some sandpaper, and just like that intense, over the top, so loaded up on hops that it's like I don't even know what to do with the rest of this beer, because the next one's going to taste weird. You guys, I feel like your beers were much more that drinkable. And obviously, and I'm bringing up Trillium because obviously they're one of the pinnacles of that juicy style. Is that like where you guys, is that what you most enjoy drinking, those styles? Or is that like, people want this, we're good at it, and we're going to, you know, we're going to do a lot of this?
Take it away, Zach.
Yeah. Well, first, yeah. No. First, thanks for the kind words and the beers.
Yeah. I mean, in terms so of like, thank hop, you so much.
Yeah. In terms of hop burn, like I really am not a fan of that. Like I appreciate, you know, like just over, you know, saturated hop character in beers, but like if you can't drink a whole pint of it, then what's, you know, if you can't finish the can, then what's the point? So I mean, we were both adamant about, you know, from day one, these cans won't, you know, need a week before you can drink it, but they should be, you know, drinkable from from day one. Without that hop burn. And that just goes to, you know, a million things from, you know, recipe development to process to the different hop products that you're using. But that's, you know, that's definitely a goal of ours. So I'm glad that's coming across. Yeah, I mean, the hop forward beers, you know, juicy, hazy style, that's definitely like a proficiency of ours, just given our background. It's also something that I love to drink. And I don't know if that's just a factor that that's what so many people are making. And that's, what you find most often on tap. For me, it's probably what I'm drinking most often because I'm just interested on how to push the style. So anytime, you know, a neighboring brewery makes New England IPA that's using a new hop product or like a new new hop variety or whatnot, I want to try it because I want to just expand my palate and my knowledge on it and keep, you know, pushing that style forward. But it's definitely not the only thing that that I like to drink. And again, that's like goes back to why this opportunity for like a smaller, you know, 10 barrel system to start was so appealing, is that it allows us to brew a lot of other styles, and it's small enough volume that we feel comfortable being able to, you know, get it in people's hands in a short amount of time while it's fresh and tasting great. We're certainly you know, going to be making a lot of IPAs, a lot of New England pails, the double IPAs and the like. But I mean, we've also expanded into, you know, stout, like Imperial stouts, adjunct porters, lighter lagers. We have our first sour beer in the tanks. We just put a Kolsch on tap this last weekend. So definitely in terms of volume, you'll probably see
I think you just spilled a business secret there, Zach.
what was that?
Oh, it was the sour beer. But yeah, I mean, oh. Like, you know, just to like yeah, echo what Zach said. I mean, like that, you know, we love IPAs. Like hoppy beer is the gateway for a lot of people into hoppy beer, and Belgian beer are like the gateways into craft beer for a lot of people. And you know, for me personally, like I really appreciate like well done. I don't want to say refined because it sounds like too snooty, but like really well done and like refined like hoppy beer. And you know, when we were doing like initial like recipe development, you know, you should have seen the counter at Zach's house. Like it was crazy. Like the brands that we had from breweries that we had, like crazy, like drink and you know, doing side, you know, side by side tests of all this different stuff and you know, really honing in on like what we wanted to do as a brewery. And you know, I think like in general, you know, every business needs to make a lot of decisions based number one on their values, and then number two on like what consumers want. And what consumers really want right now is you know, very hoppy beer. And so that's primarily what the portfolio, you know, is about. But for me personally, you know, I'm very invested in stouts and like dark beer and lagers as well, but more so on the stouts. And like that was, you know, again, like I'm probably like the jerk in the room every time because I'm like, no, we need to open with six brands. And we need to have a lager. We need to have two stouts, and then the rest can be hoppy beer. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's all part of like part of the DNA of like who we are, right? And all the beers that we put out are an expression of like a very personal thing that we feel. Like we wouldn't put it out if it wasn't something that we felt like passionate about, you know.
Okay.
Like that.
We wanted to drink ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. And that porter is like a good example, you know, like the staff beats me up about that porter all the time. Like they're like, you know, they're like, this porter, this is crazy beer. And it's like, it's our highest rated beer right now. You know, like it's the one that like, it's also very divisive, right? Like people come in and they'll try a sip of it and they'll either be like, this is the best beer I've ever had, or they'll be like, wow, this is like crazy. And I think it's a little bit too much for me. But that's okay. You know, it's not for everybody, but we have it there so that people who really enjoy it, can have access to that.
And what beer is that? I don't think I had that when I was there.
Yeah, that's the it's called Locked Latch. And the backstory of that is pretty funny. That name is pretty funny. But the idea was to make something that was sort of like not super roasty, but super like malty and dark, and kind of had like you know, it's kind of funny, like we use the word vibes a lot. So like one of the barn hexes we did, you know, we called it the melon vibes barn hex because it had like a lot of like, you know, melon characteristics to it. But the vibe for that beer was like, all right, you know, it's like you had a long night, you had a really long night hanging out with your friends and you're having breakfast the next morning. And so like what represents that? It's like coffee, you know, maple syrup, vanilla, because you're having like a sweet and like kind of indulgent breakfast, and so that was sort of like the direction that we took that beer. So it ended up with like, it ended up being like the base recipe was like a robust porter with a little bit of like a little bit of roasted malt in there to kind of bring out like a little bit of a coffee sort of flavor, and then we added Maine maple syrup and Madagascar vanilla to like sort of round it out. You know, it's definitely you have to like that style and that kind of beer to enjoy it, but I think it's really good, so that's one of my passions. And then the Secret Clubhouses, the two that we did, like, you know, Zach did one variant and I did the other. Zach chose coffee and cinnamon for his, and I did vanilla and cacao because I wanted to make like I'm on this like never ending quest to make like a beer that tastes like chocolate chip cookies, basically. and that's kind of what I came up with. And I think Zach was motivated by like fancy coffee drinks, and he wanted to like express like his love of espresso. And
yeah, I think I just really, I used cinnamon once in a beer within like the last year. And I was surprised because in theory, you know, I'm not a big fan of like your, you know, winter spiced winter warmer styles that are just like hit you over the head with baking spices. But I think when used correctly, cinnamon can just bring like a warmth and a little like woodsy character. That's not just, you know, cinnamon, like you're just pouring cinnamon on top of, you know, your coffee or on your pancakes or something. But it just adds like a complexity. Yeah. And a little warming spice, and it worked really well. I'm a huge coffee fan as well. Yeah. So that's, you know, the perfect version of an imperial stout for me.
Yeah.
So which of you guys made the better beer?
Oh, I don't know. I go back and forth. Like so, at any time, you know, I'm not drinking a ton of that beer. It's, you know, it's what, 12.3%.
Okay.
But you know, when we're like, you know, doing sensory each week, it's like, wow, that's really nice. Let me try the other one. Okay. Wow. Well, I got to go back to the first, you know, I got to go back to the vanilla cacao. And I think they complement each other really well. And I think it shows with, you know, our customers coming in too, because if they try one, they want to try the other as well. They're like, well, that was, you know, that was really good. I enjoyed that. It was complex. Like, I think I need to try the other as well. So we're selling a lot of those like in tandem. And I think it's giving a cool experience just to see, you know, with the same base beer, what you can do with, you know, different process and ingredients.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the cool thing too, is that I'm pretty sure they are almost perfectly evenly sold at this point. Like, I don't think one is outselling the other.
Well, Nick, you were talking about different styles, you know, just having a variety and not just the hop forward stuff, but darker stuff and lagers. And when you were talking about the I guess kind of farmstead, that made me think about farmhouse styles and actually kind of that Trillium story of cultivating, you know, yeast off of, I don't remember if it's like grapes from the friends or family's vineyard or something.
Yeah. It was wine grapes from the vineyard that they got married at.
Okay. And so like, do you guys have plans for, you know, maybe something as, elaborate as, you know, apple skin cultivated yeast for a wild beer, or are you guys doing some lagers? If you have the bright tanks that you can hold them in, but do you have even the space? And then do you have or have plans for a barrel program or a blending program or anything like that?
Zach, I'll let you go with that one.
I mean, yes. All the above. Well, no, in terms of wild yeast, I mean, it's something that we talk about and dream of, but we're not, you know, we're just not at a point at where we can afford to the time or to really do it correctly. Yeah. It's something.
Believe me, I would love to. That would be magical. Like if we could do that, but yeah.
And you're not in a huge space either. So that's,
yeah,
to some degree, another concern.
Right. Yeah. Cross-contamination and all that.
Yeah, certainly. That being said, we are messing around on a very small scale with mixed fermentation. We don't have anything to show for it, like on tap or in package, but it's something that we are working on because it's something that we want to make available, you know, down the road. And it's something that we're certainly both passionate about. But again, we want to take, you know, baby steps. We want to do it right. We're not going to push something out just to do it. But that's certainly in the works. And then in terms of lagers, yes. I mean, we're on our fourth batch of lager at this point. We just been keeping, we have enough bright tanks to store it. And we want to keep the yeast going. And it's something that we want to consistently have on tap for our customers. Our different iterations of our pale lager lost leaf. So we've done a couple iterations of that. It's more or less the same base recipe. It's just some, you know, a few changes on the hot side each time, different hop varieties used or hopping rates. And, you know, without, I don't have a ton of experience brewing lagers coming into this, but it's something I want to learn a lot more about. And it's something I certainly enjoy drinking quite a bit. Again, with like, relatively smaller batch size, we can make, you know, these incremental adjustments each time until hopefully one day we get to the, you know, the perfect beer if that exists. But we certainly plan on always having a pale lager on tap.
Yeah. And I mean, that was another one of the things that, like, again, you know, we pushed for around the opening was having like some kind of like oak aged lager, because, you know, I've had like a few examples, you know, over the years that have really like blown me away. And it was something that like, I thought that we could do well. And, you know, knowing what our base recipe was, like, I felt that, we felt that we could, you know, do it well and do it in a way that was like meaningful to us. So, you know, I think it was like a week or two after we opened, we released our oak aged lost leaf, which, you know, we had taken the original batch of lost leaf and split it off into some neutral white wine barrels and let it condition out in that as well. And, you know, the customer reception to that has been great. And, you know, for us as well, like it's an important step in a direction that I think we're going to be heading down, you know, to Zach's, what Zach is kind of alluding to is like a direction that we're going to take that brand like long-term, in putting those beers into oak and like, and really, not doing something necessarily like wildly different than other breweries, but, you know, making it our own, in a way that is meaningful to us. And, you know, what I mean with that is like, whenever Zach talks about this a lot and is way more eloquent about it, but you know, when we're thinking about like building recipes, we're thinking about like what the end result is, and we're starting from the end and backing into the beginning. Right. So like, you know, with Lost Leaf, like what we really wanted was like something that was very drinkable and had like not a lot of citrus character, but had sort of like an orange like citrus character to it that we could like, you know, highlight along with the rest of the hoppy beers. And so that's why we chose Mandarina Bavaria as like the dry hop for the original one. And you know, I think it comes across really well. And then it was the same thing for the oaked Lost Leaf. You know, it's very like, you know, Chardonnay forward, I guess I would say, in that sort of like oaky, buttery kind of character. And actually I had to be pulled off the ledge because I wanted to be more oaky, and everybody said it was too oaky. So we had to like blend it out a little bit, but that's a program that, you know, is super important to us. And I just love like, you know, I don't know. I love the transformation that happens with beer. Like once you put it in wood. Yeah. Sorry. I could talk about that forever.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, going back, it's same thing with like the stout, you know, it just offers customers a different experience, right? Yeah. Like same base beer. And it gives you a very clear, you know, representation of what, you know, what oak can do to the style of beer, which is not one that you typically see, you know, aged in oak.
Right.
So how much difference is there between, I mean, that's, you're talking about the white wine, Chardonnay, buttery thing. How different is that from just being a beer with diacetyl? And how much have you, or have you gotten any shit in, you know, Untappd or anything like that about basically this beer is flawed?
Yeah, honestly, much less shit than I thought we would. Yeah. I do think it comes across, even though, you know, it's like similar compounds, it definitely comes across as very, very different. It's not that like artificial butter, you know, buttered popcorn. When you think of, you know, a poorly fermented beer, it's much softer. The wood definitely adds like a really kind of creamy mouthfeel to it. And it's really just like a raw kind of like oak aroma. That's not like astringent on the palate.
Right.
So I think it's absolutely there. Like it's no doubt that you're drinking a barrel aged beer, but subtle enough that it's not overwhelming, and stays pleasant throughout the pint. You know.
Okay.
Yeah, that's one thing too. Like, you know, we're hyper aware of diacetyl, especially in these like, you know, our New England style beers, because it tends to present itself in these types of beers with the types of yeast that we're using. And, you know, when I say buttery, I mean more like that creaminess that you get from like the oak, really.
Okay.
Exactly what Zach said.
Okay. I just, as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, here comes the Untappd peanut crowd.
Oh yeah.
So you mentioned, earlier when I was, making fun of beers that use too much hops and burn my mouth, because I haven't made fun of slushy sours yet this interview, so I had to make fun of something. But do you guys have a favorite type of a favorite hop, and then a favorite form of using that hop? Like, do you guys I mean, probably I would guess mostly you're using pellets, but do you play around with cryo or whole leaf or any other kind of stuff?
Zach, you go first.
Yeah, no whole leaf yet. There are some brands coming up that we've talked about it. And especially during wet hot season coming up, we plan on doing a few fun things. We're primarily using pellets, both the T90 and then like the concentrated pellets, like Lupo Max pellets. I haven't had honestly great luck with cryo, at least on the cold side. So we haven't played around too much with that. We have been using extracts. There's some new like aroma extracts on the market that we've been using with a lot of success on the hot side. Just trying to pack in it, like as many, you know, oils as we can during fermentation, or I guess prior to fermentation, with cutting down on the bitterness.
Yeah.
On the hot side.
I mean, for me, like one hop I'm really excited about that we just put into a new beer that's coming out in a couple of weeks. Idaho Gin. Like I just dry hopped a beer on Saturday with that, and it smells crazy, like so good. And that's a really interesting hop variety to me, because it, you know, it's something that emerged naturally and, you know, in natural, it emerged naturally in nature. It was discovered in nature, and you know, they took it and, you know, grew fields of it now. And that's got a super interesting character. And like, actually I was, you know, I was messing around when I was dry hopping the beer on Saturday, you know, I was like getting these like crazy aromas off of it. And I actually like threw a couple pellets in a glass and I brought it up to the tasting room staff. And I said like, all right, everybody tell me what you smell in this. And like, you know, they came back and I was like, whoa, like blown away from like the different, different fruits that they were getting. Like, you know, everybody was like, oh, this is like strawberry, or I'm getting like just like berry medley, you know, those kinds of things that you don't usually expect out of like a you know, a hop aroma. But I don't know, I was definitely getting it. And you know, for me, like the most expressive way to use something like that is obviously in the dry hop, because, you know, you can preserve the like full aromatics, which is like the thing that really matters the most for us in terms of like sensory. So that's my answer.
Okay. Zach, you got a favorite hop?
Oh, I don't know. Honestly, I get so bored with any hop so quickly. And that's part of the reason why we've been playing around with a lot of different varieties. It's like, I just want to know what else is out there, how they can interact with one another. It's just been so much fun to do all these different permutations. Honestly, I'm still like probably my favorite hop character of any beer that we've made is the first IPA we put out, the first version of Scruggsy, the original recipe, which has a lot of Enigma, which is honestly one of my favorite hops. It has, like, it's hard to describe the character because it's really complex. Like, it has a big breadth of character. Like, it has some tropical fruit, but it has like a lot of wine notes to it, and it's hard to pinpoint, you know, like any one thing that it that it smells like so many hops are just kind of one note, which I guess is why they named it that. That like every time I smell a beer with that hop, it takes me back, and I keep going back for, you know, sniff after sniff before I start drinking it. So that's definitely one of my favorites.
Okay.
Also, Citra Lupamax is insane.
Every time we use that on brew day, it's like immediately apparent throughout the building that we're using it.
Well, I'm just glad you guys didn't say Sabro so I can actually still publish this interview.
It was funny. I was talking to one of our tap room associates tonight, and she was like talking about designing a beer, and she was like, I really want like coconut to like come across. And I was like, all right, throw some Sabro in there too. She was like, okay. Really good.
We did use Talus, which I believe is daughter of Sabro, and it wasn't marketed. I had not used it before, and it wasn't really marketed as having coconut, but I thought it definitely came in a very subtle amount. It wasn't hit you over the head like if you did 100%, you know, Sabro beer. But it had like some hints of coconut.
Yeah, that was a cool one.
Well, I'll try to keep my mind a little more open. I know Stone just, I think sometime recently did a beer that was pretty heavy on Talus. So I'll have to, maybe I can find that again. But yeah, I just had a smoothie sour, like cherry, chocolate, vanilla, something beer. It was part of the Hop Culture and Sam Adams did the Queer Beer Fest. Mm-hmm. And so I ordered that, and like most of the beer I didn't want to drink, but it was a good cause. So I tried that beer last night, and I was like, yeah, I hate this as much as I thought I was going to.
Oh, no.
But I try to be open-minded.
Stone Exotic Destinations IPA. That's the Talus.
With Talus. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm pretty well out of questions. The last thing that I wanted to mention was I'd seen something about Bellflower on, I think, Instagram, just some beer account that had mentioned something about you guys and doing some interesting stuff. And so when I was there, I was actually going to Maine Beer Co. from Portland, and Waze decided to tell me to go down a road that was literally not in existence because it was under construction and it was like a 10-foot hole in the ground. So I had to turn a different way, and driving by, and I was like, oh shit, there's Bellflower. The huge logo on the wall. It's like, all right, well, I'm not in a rush, so I'm going to go get a beer over there. And I'm very glad I stopped by. I dig the vibe and the beers.
Oh,
and
thank you.
I think you guys are going to have some, maybe not many days off, because you have tanks to keep full.
Thank you so much. You're so kind. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, we're just about an hour here, so I'm going to let you guys go. I know it's 9:30 there. But thank you guys for taking the time. And yeah, Zach, I can hear you. Like, I hear a keg every once in a while, so I know you're not done over there.
We have brew day tomorrow, and yeah, I'm in the middle of a CIP on the system and just buttoning up a few other things, but happy to do it. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks. Well, yeah. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, thanks again for the time, guys. And
cheers.
Yeah, appreciate it, and see you soon. Nick and Zach, co-founders of Bellflower, along with their wives. As I mentioned, their wives actually own the business, and Nick and Zach are just the operations and brewing side of things. Well, not just that, but they're not actually the owners of the business, which I thought was interesting. And it's obviously a team effort all the way around. As they were talking about, they both do some brewing. But yeah, when it comes to the beer, had a hazy IPA that was pretty good, and I'm usually predisposed to not necessarily liking super juicy hazy stuff, but if you're in the Portland area, I think you should probably stop in there if you haven't already done so. If you're not in the Portland area, Portland, Maine, then you're not going to find their beer because they're still really small. But yeah, I'm looking forward to stopping in again. And sounds like they're doing some pretty interesting stuff and turning things over pretty quickly, doing a lot of different stuff. They've done a couple of lagers that I've seen on the old social media lately that sound pretty interesting. If you live in Portland, I will allow you to send me Bellflower beer. I'm just going to put that out there for whoever's interested, or whomever. I don't fucking know. Nobody on earth knows which one of those is correct, and I stand by that sentence. Anyway, if you haven't already, go follow the show on Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, TikTok, MySpace, Google+, Yelp. I don't know. I just have Instagram and Facebook. But yeah, you can follow it on there. Something a little fresher news for me. Finally got the Patreon page up and running, although there is still some work to do. Gotta add some stuff since there's no patron content yet. But yeah, you can now financially support my drinking habits. This podcast. It does take a lot of time to prep and edit and contact people and set things up and do all that stuff. And there are costs that go into the, you know, the equipment and hosting services and website and all that kinds of shit that no one wants to hear about. So any support does mean a lot to me. It is helpful and appreciated. You can check it out if you want to see more, patreon.com/beertruth. And another way to support is giving the show a rating and a review if you haven't done already. And I don't mean a shitty review. Don't be a dick. And we're talking 5 stars here. Or fuck it, 10 stars. Don't be stingy. That's all I got today. Thanks for listening. Next week, got an interview with, well, I already did the interview, but you get to hear it next week. Someone who essentially created a style of beer. One that people drink a lot of. So there's your clue. And until next week, sláinte. Of Bellflower Bloop. Jesus Christ.